Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh, I've got to turn on some. This is Nate Klarfeld from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. How are you tonight? This is Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight we have Ruben Rosario, film critic for the Sun Post Weekly. Ruben, say hello.
Hello, Nate.
I'm sorry, I just had something turned on. I shouldn't have had on. Ruben is a fabulous film critic that specializes in art, film, movies. Tell us, what's an art film? What makes the difference between an art film and a regular film?
Well, let's see. For me, I like all kinds of movies, but the column that I currently write for the Sun Post started as something that was actually offered to the founder and director of the Miami Cinematheque, Dana Keith, and because of his lack of time, he didn't want to commit, but he said, I know the perfect person who'd be ideal for this, and he said, would you like to write the film column? And I said, sure. At the first, it was basically the stuff that was playing at Cinematheque or the Bill Cosford Cinema, and... as I started writing and continuing to write, and 1 week, you know, led to another, I started contacting some of the publicists and the PR people who represented the Hollywood studios locally in South Florida, and it started becoming more of a mix between our house and mainstream fare. But the exception being that what sets it apart is that for me, our house films are given the priority, mm-hmm. whereas mainstream films are secondary. Now, to answer your question, what is an art film? It's something I would probably define it as something that's outside of the mainstream, that has elements that that don't actually correspond to the what you expect, the three-act story-driven film that you normally used to, the kind of films that turn people off, films that may or may not be from another country. Mm-hmm. They may be American, but they play with the form and they play with the possibilities of film. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a very vague definition, but
right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and sometimes you go to these foreign films, and I love foreign films. Like I go to the Gateway and I go to art houses, all the Cine Paradiso and the film festivals. And yes, you aren't going to hit a home run every time. The movies at the multiplex, they know what you like. They know what you're going to, you know, they know how to make you laugh. They know how to make you cry. But, a Chinese filmmaker is not going to have your background. And that's what I find. I kind of have to sit there and go, oh, yeah, that's right. This is not a white, middle-class American Midwest. I'm from the Midwest even, so I'm even a foreigner in Fort Lauderdale. But you do learn a lot about the world, and I think that's what I enjoy about art films is that I learn things about other cultures.
Absolutely. A lot of people are tempted to, you know, lump art house and foreign films together in the same category, and I don't see it that way. I see that a lot of films from other countries, you see as many mainstream commercial films from, like, France or even China that you see from the U.S. So you can watch a foreign a film that could be just as commercial, maybe even more so than something that's being released by Warner Brothers or Paramount.
Or look at Bollywood.
Exactly.
Bollywood. That's
ultra Hollywood. That is more classical Hollywood than the Hollywood.
Hollywood now, exactly. Right. It's more like it's supposed to be Berkeley. I mean, right. I sometimes see we have I think there's a Bollywood channel on Comcast now. So we have fun with that, and we see some of them.
Yeah.
They have love stories, and they have this music, this dramatic music, which we don't see anyway. Tell us about your involvement with the Miami Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. I think that's fascinating. That's where I first heard about you, of course, when you worked with Carol Combs. I believe it was. Tell us about your experience with that, good and bad. We can dish.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm here, right?
Right.
For the bad. Oh, the good too. Right.
I call it dish. Go ahead.
It was 1999. I wasn't getting any progress done on my master's thesis, and I was pretty much getting ready to, you know, throw the towel and pull the plug on the University of Miami. When my friend Dennis Goldburn, who works at Jackson Memorial, that's in the IT department, sent me the former in this email from Robert Rosenberg, the director of Before Stonewall, Emmy Award-winning director. And he was getting ready to put together the very first Miami Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, and he needed an assistant. So this is perfect for me. I thought, this is the internship I never had. So I answered the ad. I went to his apartment. We talked briefly, and 1 week later, I was jumped right in. And it was by the skin of our teeth. It was Robbie and myself in his apartment. Later, we went to other different, like a series of different venues to have an office. But that's the way it started.
Right.
Robbie Rosenberg and me in his apartment.
I remember Robbie. Yeah. I know Robbie. I was board chair of the Stonewall Library and Archives or back then in the olden days. And they were very I think the first year they moved into the colony, the first year they moved into the Multiplex, because they were all over town before that. They invited me to come and introduce a film, and I was like so excited, and I got to meet the director and the some of the actors, and it was fascinating. And then I came back years later as a alumni, I guess an alum. I'd met Carol Combs, or I'd run into her at a foundation meeting, some nonprofit, and she said, "Would you like to introduce another film? We always have fun with you." And I go, "Huh? You're making fun of me?" No, I said, "We always have fun with you. You're Northerners." And I got to meet Julianna Moore. I can't remember what was the name of the movie. It was about Bakelite. It was about a schizophrenic gay son who murdered.
Name is Savage Grace.
Savage Grace.
Yeah.
Thank you. You've got such a great memory. I love Ruben. When I get online with Ruben or I speak with Ruben, all the movies that I don't remember the name of, but I remember like a little tiny tidbit and I can tell you the plot, all I have to do is tell him like three sentences and he comes up with it. Savage Grace. And you know what? I don't think that movie ever played commercially down here, did it?
I don't think it did. It was very, very popular when it was released on DVD.
Oh, it was popular.
It was very popular. It still is.
Really?
Today. Yeah.
Yeah, I might get that on Netflix and watch it again. Let me just tell you. Tell us a little bit. Do you remember the plot of the movie? Because I do. It was kind of weird.
Well, it's a true story of this. I believe the patriarch of the family was involved in aluminum or...
No, Bakelite. He invented the plastic. For those of you who are over 30 years old, or under 30, or under 40, I don't know if under 30 or over 40, the old telephones, before they were color, before they had plastic that was color, Bakelite was two colors, black and brown, and they had some white creamy colors, and that was what your old... plastic radio was, and it was a baked plastic. It was like a putty, and they would mold it, and so it was this really hard plastic, but it had a patina that was very unique. And of course, when Bell Telephone decided to use Bakelite in all of their black desk phones, all, not some, the man became a millionaire patenting the process. I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars, and of course, he had a gay schizophrenic son, or bipolar. I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist.
He had issues.
Thank you. Being married to a psychiatrist, I have to give a diagnosis. And there's a tumultuous relationship with his mother. That's a good word, right?
Yeah, I would say that.
I don't want to give it away.
It's dark. It goes into very dark territory.
Yeah, it's not a movie you're going to take a date to and snuggle.
I am a big fan of the director. His name is Tom Kalin. He did the Leopold and Loeb movie.
Right, right.
Yeah, Swoon. Yeah.
And you know what? It is very similar to Swoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, if anyone wants to see. Those are great Netflix rainy night movies. Swoon, Savage Grace, you know.
Just don't see them together back to back.
No, yeah. Because you won't sleep.
Right.
You won't sleep. That's good. Okay, give me a movie. I want the name. I'm giving out names of movies tonight for people for different reasons, okay?
Feed the Queue. Feed the Queue.
Right, okay. Listen, here we go. Feed the Queue on Netflix. Date night art film movie to impress a date.
Oh, goodness gracious. I would say, the first one that comes to mind, like reflex, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset.
Before Sunrise,
That's
Before Sunset.
Richard Linklater's films that he did with Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke.
Okay, Ethan Hawke. Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Ethan Hawke, yes. That's an American film.
Yes.
It's a very art film. It didn't get wide distribution. It's incredibly sexy. My personal opinion.
It's talky, but never boring.
Well, I think all art films are a little more talky. Or agree with me or disagree with me. Either they're really talky, or art films have these long pauses where they just stare at each other back and forth.
The detractors call them navel gazing.
Navel gazing.
I had to turn my microphone off because I was laughing so hard, navel gazing. Well, it is kind of funny that there's different ways of in a Disney movie you have the harps and the birds and the stuff to announce what's going on.
Don't trash Disney. I'm a big Disney freak.
I can see what we're wearing. This is radio, and he's wearing his Disney shirt.
That's right.
He's wearing his Disney shirt. Okay, you know, it's okay. I'm a Disney fan too, but I just, you know, I didn't have my clothes on clean. All right. So I've got your date night movie, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, with Ethan Hawke. So you can all write that down. I said it three times. Okay.
Well, actually, let me add one more movie. You want the gay? Sure. The gay title would be A Beautiful Thing.
Beautiful thing. Oh my God. The two kids dancing at the end. The two boys dancing at the end. It's a British movie. A little bit hard to understand because they talk really, really fast.
That's what subtitles are for.
I know. I understand. But really, really, if you haven't seen A Beautiful Thing, I don't know who the actors are in there.
They're actually not that well known.
They're not well known at all. No, they're just it's two young. It's two young schoolboys. I think they're about 14, 13 years old, in a working class neighborhood. One's a single parent. I think they're both single parents.
Right. The one who's not the protagonist, the one who lives with his father, is as being abused physically by
his
father.
Right.
Right. Whereas the it would be the lead. Who's basically into musicals and a little more out there. He's always had a crush on his neighbor. You know,
right.
The projects, I would call the
Correct.
Projects.
It is projects.
Right. And one night he has to stay because his father has been particularly brutal to him. And one thing leads to another, and they wind themselves together in bed.
It's so cute. Yeah. It's not pedophilia. It's two kids of the same age. It's school. It's junior high crush, and it's the cutest movie. And and at the end, if you don't cry, you're not human.
And all the sex happens off screen.
That's right. All the
you
sex.
Just make out.
Right. Yeah. It fades. It fades, and then they wake up the next morning in each other's arms. Yeah, that's perfect. That's what I want. Okay, so we got the date movie. Movies. Okay. A perfect movie to invite a friend over after you've been dumped.
Oh, goodness.
You're fast, so I can do this.
Oof. Something happy.
Yeah, right.
But it has to be good.
It has to be good, but it has to be kind of silly almost.
Yeah.
You got to have a little silliness.
Okay, I would say a French movie called Sitcom.
Oh, I've seen that. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Sitcom, yes. It's a French movie. It's English subtitles.
It's a French Joan Waters kind of film.
It is a French Joan Waters. Oh, my God. I didn't even think of that.
And the reason I mention it is because I just interviewed the director recently, Francois Ozon, who just had just released his newest film, which is with Catherine Deneuve and Gerard Depardieu together again. It's called Potiche.
Botiche. You sent me the your review. It's wonderful. Botiche. B-O-I-T.
P.S. and Paul. O-T-I-C-H-E.
Okay. Because I don't know that it's going to play.
It did play here. And it opened big.
It opened big here. That's right.
For this kind of film,
For this kind of film. But well, look at who they had in it. Catherine Deneuve and Gerard Depardieu. I love saying that name. That would be a good film, another happy film. One film that I think would be cute for after you've been dumped is Crazy.
Oh, that's a great film.
Yeah,
that's more of a family, you know.
Right, but that's what you invite your sister over after
absolutely.
You, or you know your mother.
It's a very hetero-friendly film.
Oh my God!
The director is straight and crazy, and the screenwriter is gay, and it's based on the screenwriter's. Loosely based on his own experiences.
Really?
The director just made The Young Victoria.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. His name is Jean-Marc Vallée. He's French-Canadian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, I'm looking at my switchboard. Okay, good. Oh, they like this. Everyone likes these questions. Okay. All right. Film to watch right before you break up with your boyfriend or girlfriend.
Existential.
That's right. Exactly. You got the right word. You pulled it out of my head. We must be on the same wavelength here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ruben and I look alike, but we have two different mothers. We have this dark hair and the dark skin and everything. It's kind of funny.
Well, actually, we just did. We did. Tom Kaling Swoon would be perfect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You're
Leopold
right.
Leopold and Loeb. Beautiful black and white photography.
Something black and white right before
Very
you break
Very postmodern.
Up. Yeah, you got to go black and white.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking The Postman Always Rings Twice.
Oh, the classic with John Garfield?
Yeah, the John Garfield. Absolutely. The John Garfield version.
Lana Turner, yeah.
Yeah, Lana Turner. I couldn't remember. I knew there was a beautiful woman, and for some reason, like, Frank Sinatra came in. He was married to Lana Turner, right? Or was he married
to the other? They were together.
They were together. Yeah, I knew there was. I got the Frank Sinatra thing. Okay, The Postman Always Rings Twice. The old version, not the Jack Nicholson.
Right, which I never saw, actually. I have my lagoons where this movie I'm supposed to have seen it, but I haven't.
Oh, really? Because I've never seen the Jack Nicholson version either.
Right, yeah.
It was like I had enough of Jack Nicholson. Don't yell at me. Don't start hating me. But Jack Nicholson gets on my nerves because it's the same voice.
Oh, you gotta get some hate mail now.
I know. It's the same voice, and I'm just tired. He's always Nicholson, so I'm just kind of like tired of
it. I'm
a
big fan. About Schmidt is one of my favorite movies of the past decade.
Okay.
It was so incredible.
Well, see, that would be a good movie before a breakup.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because anything with Kathy Bates.
And she's incredible in it.
That's her best movie. That was her breakout movie, wasn't it?
Misery was.
Misery. You're right. Misery was.
But I'm a big horror fan, so we can talk about horror films.
Yeah, too. Horror film. Yeah. Okay. Halloween night. What's your best art film for Halloween night?
Well, it depends what kind of horror film you want to see on Halloween night. I mean, you want the gory, you know, old-fashioned. I would go with Rob Zombie's The Devil's Rejects.
The Devil's Rejects?
Devil's Rejects.
Okay, that's a good one.
Which takes place in the 70s, got this great 70s soundtrack, this grainy style. It's very disturbing. It's almost like an homage to films like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, about this family of freaks and how they wreak havoc. And it's you know, you can argue how morally reprehensible it is, but it's quite effective.
Right.
You want something a little more, in terms of more about dark shadows, you know. Don't go down that basement.
That's right.
I would go with the original Ring, Ringu, the Japanese Ring.
Japanese Ring?
It's called Ringu.
Ringu.
The Ring was the American remake by the director of the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy.
All right.
With Naomi Watts. And it was decent.
Yes, I liked
and
it.
You would consider it scary, but then you see the original. It's like, wow, that is way creepier.
Well, yeah, and then there's Cape Fear.
Cape Fear
would be a good Halloween movie, the original one.
The original,
1930s one.
That's pretty creepy. I think Scorsese did a really interesting job.
On the new one.
Right. He made it into one of his own films, and he was very successful in doing a commercial Scorsese picture.
Right. But, there was something about being in color that wasn't as scary. The black and white was scarier for me.
It's a very different vibe.
Yeah, different vibe. Yeah, what year was that made? Do you remember what year? 30?
62, I'm saying, the original? 62, maybe?
Cape Fear was 62?
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe I'm wrong. I know that 91 was the year for the remake.
It was the year where, okay. So it was 30 years in between. I knew that was something. So maybe it was 61, 92. Okay. Well, that was good. Okay, so now we've got our Halloween movie. Okay. Best movie for Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas break, or a winter break.
Oh, I love Gremlins. Joe Dante's Gremlins. Is the one
Gremlins?
That's the one I go for.
The original Gremlins.
Yes.
You're right. When? God, that was 70s, wasn't it?
That was 80.
Oh, 80. 80. Oh, my God. I'm getting... God, you're much better at this than I am. I put everything in the 70s. When I don't remember something, I say, it was the 70s.
And it's aged so well.
Gremlins, I saw Gremlins. I got it on Netflix about a year ago just for grins. And it perfect. It came on a terrible, terrible day here in Florida with a cold spell. It was 50 degrees. Don't yell at me, anybody. And I didn't want to go outside. I was like all bundled up and I watched Gremlins and it was perfect. But yeah, that would be a good one for winter break. Okay, what's your best goofball film? Goofball, total goofball.
Oh, it's guilty pleasure time.
Yes.
Well, I said my friends are actually waiting now. They're waiting to see what I'm going to say next. Actually, there's a film that Sandra Bullock did. I think it was maybe the same year that she won the Oscar for The Blind Side. It's called All About Steve.
All About Steve.
It's a film that everyone trashed. When it
really?
Opened. It opened. It didn't do that well.
Uh-huh.
I got terrible reviews.
Uh-huh.
And it's got such a, for me, cheeky sensibility to it. It's one of the ones that like you said, I'm in a goofy mood.
Yeah.
I'll put that on. My Achilles heel.
Achilles heel.
In terms of themes or aspects of the film,
uh-huh.
Anything with furry critters acting silly.
Yes, actually.
Will draw me. Like a moth to a flame.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Really? So have you seen Rio?
I saw Rio. I reviewed Rio.
I thought, well, you know what? I read your review of Rio.
I'm kind of mixed. I'm a little mixed. I was a little mixed.
I didn't like it as well as I liked the. What was the one? What was the Ben Stiller one where they got the animals that went to the wrong place?
The Night at the Museum.
No, it was animated.
Oh.
I'm having trouble.
Madagascar.
It was on the tip of my tongue. Okay. Now, see, I like Madagascar.
It is. They're both better films.
Yeah, better.
I think what kind of raises them a little bit, I don't think they're fantastic films, but what makes them kind of like cut above their usual genre of DreamWorks animation was the characters of the penguins.
Yes. Yeah. Well, of course, they took the show away.
Right.
Yeah, they took the show away from me. I happen to like animate. I love Toy Story.
Yeah.
I loved all those, all that whole genre that just came out late. My son is 34, so I couldn't take him to, I had to go alone during the day so nobody could see me, or I had to wait till they came out on DVD. Thank God for DVD.
The thing about Pixar, and I know a lot of friends disagree with me, is that it started being a really interesting company that had some this subversive elements in their films within the framework of being a Disney release. And in recent years, it's kind of been losing that edge. A lot of people love Toy Story 3, but a lot of people put it on their top 10 list. And when I saw it, no reviews had come out, and I was very mixed about it. I was actually a little disappointed. And I thought everyone was going to agree with me, so I actually wrote a negative review. I didn't trash it or anything, but I was actually very disappointed. And I was expecting the reviews to go that way, and then I opened the papers on Friday.
I loved it.
And everyone loves it except me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I am a big Pixar fan, particularly the work of Brad Bird,
mm-hmm.
Who directed The Incredibles and Ratatouille.
Okay, yeah, Ratatouille was fun.
The Incredibles just came out on Blu-ray.
Oh, really?
And it looks phenomenal. It is my favorite Pixar movie. Uh-huh. It is such a great film.
Okay.
And it's just great filmmaking.
Okay.
And I'm very happy that Tom Cruise decided to think outside the box and hired Brad Bird to direct Mission Impossible 4 because he's perfect for it.
Yeah, he is perfect for it. You're right. Okay, tell me what your best favorite musical.
Cabaret.
Cabaret.
I mean, that's the first thing that reflex comes to my head. Yeah.
A gay man here did not say burlesque. It's wonderful.
Actually, burlesque is not as bad as people say it is.
I did not think burlesque. I was late seeing burlesque, which is terrible. I wanted to see it right when it opened. I didn't want to hear anything bad about my girl Cher. And I went to see it after everyone had trashed Christina Aguilera, everyone had trashed the movie, everyone trashed Stanley Tucci. Well, how could you trash Stanley Tucci? I read terrible reviews about Stanley Tucci.
Blasphemy.
You can't do that to my boy. Anyway, I went to see it. I had so much fun. It was like I was in there 10 minutes and it was over. It was like 2 hours later and I went, this is not right. I love this movie. And nobody agreed with me. You're the first person.
No, actually, Ben Rodriguez also was kind of mixed but positive on it. Uh-huh. I mean, it does have a minor share of admirers. It's not a brilliant film, but it's got a very nice camp element that it doesn't quite take itself so seriously. And that's what makes it work. It's a little tidbit about the director, Steven Anton, actually played the jerk boyfriend in The Goonies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was another. Oh, yeah, that was another one of those Goonies, Gremlins. What was the third one? There was a third one, Goonies, Gremlins, and there was another movie, a furry movie back then. I'll think of it later.
Yeah.
We'll think of it later. Okay, so we got your musical, we've got your comedy, slapstick comedy. Best Western or war film?
Okay, I would say Western would be John Ford's The Searchers.
The Searchers, yes. Yeah. Oh, John Ford, The Searchers. Go ahead.
And more recently, there was a film that came out called The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford.
Yes, that was
brilliant.
That was incredible. And that got not terrible reviews, but it didn't get much play.
The reviews were positive. The audience reaction was more cold.
Right. Yeah. The audience didn't quite get it. Yeah.
Right.
The Assassination of Jesse James. I remember that. I remember that movie. Okay, what about a war film?
War film, I would say there's two that come to mind. Stanley Kubrick's Path of Glory.
Path of Glory.
Which is about the running of a war, the administrative aspect of running a war.
Right.
The original All Quiet on the Western Front.
The original, the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, what about Saving Private Ryan?
Saving Private Ryan is a brilliant film. It's flawed. There's some of Spielberg's weaknesses, even though I adore Spielberg's work. And
right.
Spielberg was the one that made me study film in the first place. E.T. was that film to me.
Yeah, everybody.
And no, he did really well. That's the one scene that still haunts me every time I think about it is the scene where the German soldier kills the Jewish character with a dagger, and that just gets under the skin because you feel violated as a viewer who had invested so much into this character.
Right. Yeah.
I hated Spielberg for doing it that way, but I had to admire how effective it was.
Well, that's what their job is. Their craft is to make you feel uncomfortable. I mean, if they can make you feel that uncomfortable for this long, this many years later, they've done their job well. I like Patton.
That's a great film.
I love Patton. I think if I had to think of a war film, it would be Patton. Yeah, okay. So we've got some great stuff. Oh, comedy film. We did a slapstick, but let's do comedy.
I would say 1930s screwball comedies. I love those. Bringing Up Baby.
Bringing Up Baby.
The Philadelphia Story. His Girl Friday. I love the films. Anything like with Cary Grant, Rosalind Russell, Katharine Hepburn.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think of Hitchcock?
I love Hitchcock, and there's a lot of humor in Hitchcock's films.
There is a lot of humor.
He doesn't get enough credit. Actually, one of his first films, he started doing silent films.
Right.
When he actually came to Hollywood in the beginning of the 1940s, 1941, he did a comic called Mr. and Mrs. Smith, not this one, but another one,
yeah.
And that was actually a very funny film. It was a comedy, and it was actually very funny. I love Hitchcock.
Right.
You know, we're soulmates in the kindred spirits, in sensibility.
Right, and there's always his little thing about being in all the films, either his voice or walking through. I think
Absolutely.
That's always hilarious. just a little side note. We try to keep, gay and lesbian films in the Stonewall National Museum and Archives. Here's the plug, right? And we wanted to get when we switched over to DVDs about 3 or 4 years ago. We didn't get rid of our VHSs. We put them in storage and we use them as we need them when we can't find a certain film. I wanted to get a copy of Rope because Rope is not his only gay theme, but it's the major gay theme. It's like the Leopold and Loeb murder.
Right.
Let's murder for the sake of murder. Just for the hell of it, and type thing, and it has a pretty strong gay theme for the era. And of course, it was filmed. I guess it was called One Real Film or something.
It's made to feel like it's one uninterrupted take, even though it's a series of long pans,
right?
Very very seamlessly edited together. Yeah.
But that film to me was really good. And we tried to get it on DVD, and I could not find it anywhere from the distributors in the United States. And so we really don't use any bootleg films. We don't use any copies of films. We don't digitize anything off of VHS that we can't, buy somewhere. And I found it from a distributor in Japan. And it's English with Japanese subtitles. And it's the only DVD we can find of Rope. No, Rope was made. It's Farley Granger and... I forgot who the other one was. We'll have to look. Somebody's going to call
him. I know Hume Cronin. I think he had a very small role.
Yes, he did have a small role. He did a little. Well, there was a party. It was during that party. Jimmy Stewart was, of course, the teacher. But that was a great movie. We do have it at the Stonewall Library. It's incredibly difficult to find. I don't think it's on Netflix because they would have to send it to you with a Japanese subtitle.
Right.
So if it was a DVD. I don't know if they've licensed it for streaming. But I don't. What happens is that these films. Some of them aren't owned by the same film company because the companies went out of business.
Right.
So there's all these little things.
It's funny to mention Rope. Farley Granger passed away recently.
Yes, yeah.
Another film that Hitchcock did had very, very heavy gay subtext is Strangers in the Train.
Strangers
also,
on the Train.
Also with Granger.
Very, very homoerotic.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way they look at each other and how close they get to it. They're very, very – I mean, they're basically almost laying on top of each other. It's incredible. I just want to explain tonight that we had a little different format. Ruben did not call in. Usually most of my calls are from all over the they're from all over the world. We've done people from India and England and all over, and mostly New York. But Ruben's sitting in my house because we just had dinner, and this is the first time I've actually done a face-to-face interview, and I think I like him a lot better than that because I can see his reaction, and we're having a lot of fun. So I think I'm going to be doing more of these face-to-face interviews. I've got the podcast system set up so I can have two. I just want to remind you all out there that this podcast in about 1 hour will be available if you want to hear it, if you want to recommend it to a friend, go back to the website and go into the archive or on demand, and you'll see Ruben Rosario Comes to Stonewall Live. It'll be on there for 5 years. That link will be active. You can also embed this onto your Facebook or onto your own website or blog. I'm going to talk to Ruben. I'm going to talk him into doing a blog maybe, or his own blog talk radio show. I think he's got the material, but you know, we'll let you know. Anyway, Ruben, you want to say good night?
It's been a pleasure sharing this time with you, Nate. And don't forget to keep feeding that queue.
Feeding the queue. Feed the queue on that. Keep Netflix happy, right?
And not just rent movies, go see them in the theaters.
Yeah, it's a completely different experience.
Absolutely.
Unless you have a giant home. Okay, good night from Fort Lauderdale. Thank you so much.